Well, museums are full of precious and priceless items from all over the world, but have you ever wondered how they got there? Perhaps you have. The second season of the ABC's award-winning podcast, Stuff the British Stole, will appear in your podcast streams today, delving into the murky history behind some of the world's most prized acquisitions. The first episode tells the story of some rare Maori wood carvings that were about to be auctioned off in London when the New Zealand government realised they'd been stolen.
And I said, on the left is a totally different style, and the other side on the right, is there a square hole in it? And he went silent for a while and then said, yes, how did you know? And I said, well, they were in Taranaki in New Plymouth in 1972. And he said, but that can't be because the catalogue says that they were bought in America in the 1930s. It was obvious that it was not true.
That's the voice of Ron Lambert, a former museum worker in New Zealand, who's a crucial part of that particular story. The host of this podcast is Mark Fennell, a familiar voice to you. Good morning, Mark.
Hello, Hamish. How are you?
I'm really excited that this is coming back for a second season. Tell me more about that particular story and how you track down the origins of it.
Well, the stories of the Motunui Epo, which are these precious, precious panels that were sort of buried for a long time and then pulled out of the ground. But then nobody really knew what happened to them for years. And when the New Zealand government realised they existed was actually when, as you alluded to earlier, they were put on sale at Sotheby's. But the reason they were put on sale at Sotheby's is because they were being used as collateral to pay off a ransom for a very rich Swiss art collector whose daughter had been abducted by the Italian mafia and he needed to pay back the ransom. And so we ended up with this weird situation where he needs the money, right? But New Zealand realised that they've got something that's been illegally smuggled out of their country and they put an injunction on it, or at least they attempt to put an injunction on it. So suddenly you have a very rich Swiss art collector and New Zealand at war in a British court. And that's sort of, we chart what happens after that and what ends up happening with these artworks, which is an absolutely wild story from go to woe. It's a remarkable, remarkable piece of history.
There's a fair bit of detective work in this. Are you surprised at the twists and turns? I mean, just reading through the series list of this new season, are you surprised yourself at the twists you take?
Look, I've always maintained with this series that we set out to treat historical crimes with the same rigour that you would treat a modern crime. It's more complicated because sometimes evidence passes into out of memory. And so I think we always have to be quite honest about what we do know and what we don't know. This was an unusual one because it deals with something that was relatively recent in terms of the smuggling itself. It happened in the 1970s. But I think the key with Stuff the British Stole is always, it can't just be random stories of strange ephemera that sit in museums and private collections. The objects have to connect back to modern day. They have to tell you something about the world we have today and what colonialism, for writ large, has done to our life. And when I say done to our life, that doesn't always necessarily translate to a bad thing. I think one of the things that I set out to do with the series is kind of acknowledge that history is messy. I think sometimes when we talk about history, we have a tendency to kind of rather go, well, it was all bad or it was all good. And reality, particularly when it comes to the British Empire, there's a lot of both. You know, the horrendous, things that happened in terms of dispossession of land, but also we sort of wouldn't literally be here without it. And so it's really important to kind of guide you through the mess, because I don't think the good and the bad ever balance each other out or cancel each other out. They simply coexist. And I think what's beautiful, maybe beautiful is not the right word, but what's very elegant to get about audio storytelling is you can kind of guide the audience or yourself through that, and you have to stand in the mess. You have to go, okay, well, this is how we got here. What do we think of that? And take in the complexity of that. And so to that end, the twists and turns are necessary, because the twists and turns are what history provides you with. And I think it's just about showcasing that in a way that makes sense. But you're right, there are wild stories. And they all come from the audience. You know, we set up an email address at the end of last year for people to email. And honestly, Hamish, there were hundreds of emails from around the world. With basically people saying, hey, I saw this object in a museum and I don't know how it got there. Can you tell me? And that was our job for the year. We set about finding out exactly how things ended up in these museums. And the stories are They're wild. They just are.
I'm guessing if you were asking the audience what to investigate, that might be part of the reason you've landed with the Elgin Marbles this season. It's episode. I mean, in a sense, this is one of the most emblematic of all the treasures that you might think about in this context.
Yeah, so I resisted doing the Elgin Marbles or the Parthenon Marbles, depending on which direction you want to go in. I resisted doing it in the first series because I was like, oh, what can we say that's already been, it's already been done. But what was fascinating is, yes, you're right, I inundated by every Greek person in the nation and beyond. But what I found was a really interesting story of actually Greek-Australian expats who are fighting both here and in Greece and in London to actually convince the Greek government to approach the return of the marbles differently. And I think the other thing that was really important is to actually go back and retell how it is they got to the UK, because in reality, the reason why it's taken 200 years of fighting for, you know, for basically for the British government to say no, which is where we're at right now, is because it's legal. What the reason the British Museum has the Elgin Marbles is quite simply because they have a bunch of laws around it that protect them. So in reality, as long as Greece or Greek Australians try and fight on British terms, they will lose because the law is on the side of the British Museum. But what's interesting is there's now a group of really passionate Greek expats that are trying to fight it in a completely different way in an international arena and trying to see if that works. And we thought that, you know, it's a really powerful story of just how much the Parthenon Marbles still matter to Greeks, like literally millions of Greeks around the world. It's a real, I was surprised actually at the real fury that exists in that community. And actually, if you dig into the history, you kind of understand why. And it's sort of sad and a really powerful story of a community that are trying to rethink, you know, a 200-year-old scandal.
I had a colleague once when I worked at Channel 4 in the UK who turned up to the British Museum to do an interview about something totally unrelated, and as they were setting up said to the museum curator or whoever it was, jokingly, when are you returning the Elgin Marbles? And they abruptly turned the whole thing off, threw them out of the museum. Yeah. I'm interested to know, did you get any reaction from any of these big institutions in response to perhaps the future of the items?
It's interesting with museums because I do love museums, and I actually do love the British Museum. And we spoke to the British Museum last season. They were willing to speak to us about an Australian artefact. I literally spent months, producer Zoe Ferguson and myself, we spent months emailing and calling, and they offer up a boilerplate piece of text, which is literally a piece of text you can find on their website. They don't talk about it these days. We found a lot of archive of them talking about in the past, which you can hear in the episode next week, and obviously their statement will be on the website. But I think it's really telling that the British Museum don't like to talk about the Parthenon Marbles because they're in a weird position. They've got this lovely boilerplate piece of text, which, you know, obviously we'll point to, but the reality is they don't talk about it because they know if it's open to scrutiny, the legality, well, the circumstances upon which the legality of their claim is very debatable. And if you start getting into questions about who took what and when permission was given for what, if you start getting into it, it's a bit of a house of cards. And so I think one of the reasons why they tend not to put up people to talk about it these days, and it was also subject to a UNESCO kind of convention not that long ago, which was probably in train when we were asking, they don't talk about it because I think my strong suspicion is that they know how they got it, and they know if they talk about it too much, people will ask, the public will ask questions. It's also worth pointing out that the return of the Parthenon Marbles is overwhelmingly popular with British people. Like, they've done multiple polling over the years. British people would prefer it goes back. So but it sets a really dangerous precedent for the British Museum if they were to do that. Suddenly everybody, literally everybody around the colonised world, would start asking for things back. So it's a very complex situation for them. It's a very passionate one for Greeks around the world, though.
Mark Fennell, it's always a delight to chat, and we're all looking forward to listening to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hamish.
The series is called Stuff the British Stole. Season 2 is coming out shortly. Mark is the creator and host, and you can find the first episode of Season 2 today on the ABC Listen app.